Thank you, Jerry. For those of you who haven't met Jerry before, he's a great guy, and I encourage you to get to know him better. Before I start my talk, I wanted to say a few things. First, it's a real privilege to be here with you. And then next, I want to tell you that it's very important for you to feel part of what I've got to say today, because what I've got to say today will affect your life and your kids' lives and future generations' lives, if there are future generations. Also, I need to give you a warning before I give my talk. This is not going to be politically correct. But as a Christian in a country where it is politically correct for 330 congressmen over a period of 3 years to write 20,000 bad checks, and as a Christian in a nation where a high school in Florida tries to teach their high schoolers abstinence in sex if they're unmarried, and then gets sued by people like Planned Parenthood, while on the other side of the country, there's a school district in LA that realizes there just might be a connection between all the free condoms they're passing out in their sex education classes and a high rate of teenage pregnancy. So what do? The politically correct thing, they teach a class in creative masturbation to their high schoolers. In a nation like this, as a Christian, I enjoy being politically correct, just a notch below catching AIDS. I need to give you one other warning, and that is, you need to find someone on break, probably, who you can talk with tomorrow. When I gave this talk one time before, the people, when I finished giving the talk, felt fine. And then as things sunk in the next morning, they were devastated. And they said, "Fritz, you've got to tell your people to ahead of time that they need people to be a support person. So network with each other and trade phone numbers, because I won't be there tomorrow for you." And there's going to be a lot of devastating things said today. Now, we may have to dim the lights if we're going to pick up the colored pictures. And I'm concerned that some of these, we're not even picking up all of the...
You can move it closer, Fritz, if you want.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's see. Are we close enough to pick it all up?
Probably. Seeing whether it's focused.
That's true. It's a transparency made off of a photocopy. Hey, mister, what are your four answers? Yes, sir. No, sir. No excuse, sir. And, sir, I do not understand. Those are the four answers that I was allowed to give at West Point. I entered West Point July 3rd, 1973. And the first 2 months there are called Beast Barracks. They break you down and they build you into the soldier that they want you to be. And I thought that this tearing down process was discipline when I was there. But and slept very little and did a lot of push-ups and running. Between my first and my second year at West Point, I went over to the Holy Lands. And it was right after the Yom Kippur War. And if there was ever a fantastic military victory, is the Yom Kippur War. But I immediately saw that they hadn't won anything. They'd won this great military victory, but they hadn't gained anything from it. And the lunacy of fighting wars for our establishment politicians was very clear. And I did a double take on what I wanted to do with my life, because I realized that there was almost an endless number of young men that our country or our politicians, our world order, could have to use as cannon fodder, but that there were very few men who are willing to give their lives totally over to the Lord and to serve in the Lord's army. So I decided to take the one thing that I had learned at West Point, which was indicated by the four answers I gave you. If you were given an order, I do this. And if you didn't get the job done, you were given the answer, no excuse, sir. So you learned responsibility and obedience. And I took that one valuable lesson that I had learned at West Point and decided to apply it to my life. So when I resigned in my second year, I was determined to do the Lord's will, no matter how silly that was, no matter what it was that the Lord wanted me to do, I was going to follow through and do it. But this is what I really want to go into. This is maybe one of the most important things that I'll be able to share with you, and you have it in your handout. If we go back to the Garden of Eden, when evil or Satan came into the garden, he said that knowledge, he said that the fruit of this tree, of the knowledge of good and evil, would give them salvation. Now, salvation through knowledge, that's Gnosticism, okay? Now, they began to realize that knowledge is power. But of course, you don't want to give all your power away instantaneously. If you want control over someone, you give it out in increments. So how Satan sets things up is the first element is to say, I have secret hidden knowledge. And you have instantly given yourself an instant power base. Now everybody's got to come to you because you have this hidden knowledge, right? And I'll cover three words here. If you go in and look at witchcraft or any of these others, they'll use the words esoteric, arcane, and occult. Those three words, esoteric, arcane, and occult, mean exactly the same thing. They mean hidden. This is the hidden knowledge that Satan's whole world system of religion gives out to people. But they can't give away their power base. They've got to give it out in increments. So if you join the Masons, they give this out as you go through degrees. And as you progress through the degrees, you're given, they dish you out more and more incrementally. Or if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you have to stay in touch with God's soul channel of communication, the Watchtower Society, and their magazines. And they dole out in increments this revelation knowledge to you over a period of time. Or if you're in the charismatic movement, you're made dependent upon some great prophet that you can't leave him because he is God's source of knowledge to revelation knowledge to you, and they make you dependent upon that preacher alone. So the first component was hidden knowledge. The second component of how Satan sets up a Gnostic religion is to hand out this knowledge in increments. And the third component is to set it up pyramid shaped like this. You cannot get the commitment from the broad masses that you could from a few select initiates. So they will have a group of initiates who are a higher class, and they'll have almost basically one religion for them, and then they'll have another religion for the broad masses. What you're looking at is the clergy class, for instance, of the Catholic Church and the laity. Okay, if you go to the Jehovah's Witnesses, you would you would see that they have a governing body as their governing as their cover ruling body up here. They have an initiate class, which is called the anointed, who are promised heaven. And then you have the great crowd, who are promised paradise on earth. And the same pattern is repeated many, many times over. And I'll show you some of the groups that do this. Now you take, for instance, within the Jehovah's Witnesses, there, in many of these other groups, I've discovered that the key men are Satanists. And they have a cover ruling body that hides them. Now if we turn this pyramid, this Gnostic religion that we have just built here, and there's even a book, How to Create Your Own Religion, if you turn that on its side and make it into a piece of pie, now look at what we've got here. This is the perfect control mechanism. In the center of all these different religious bodies are Satanists that know each other, that are collaborating and working together. And this I've discovered as a fact. I'm giving you inside information there. Then surrounding them are the visible ruling bodies of these religious bodies. And then you have a priesthood within, you know, or an initiate group within that religious group. And then you have your broad masses out here. Perfect control mechanism. You have, like, let's say a Catholic out here, and they're fighting the Mormon out here, who's fighting the Jehovah's Witness out here. And the people on the outer fringes are all divided and fighting each other. They never rebel against the middle. If they would ever rebel against the middle, what's protecting the actual movers and shakers? The priesthood. Now, some of the priesthood are actually committed. They're actually believers in what they're doing. And some of them are just corrupt. That's the way they make a living. But at any rate, they act as a buffer to protect the ruling body there. And this formula, which I got from the other side, by the way, can be seen in many different flavors. They realize that when you go into a restaurant, you want a menu of things to choose from. So if you want a Gnostic hierarchy that worships the sun, you can come over here and pick this. Or you want New Thought Christianity, you can come over here. All of these groups follow that pattern I just showed you. And my apologies to Baskin-Robbins, they have more than 31 flavors. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. Now, when you think back on your pie-shaped diagram that you got in your handout, the walls between the different pies are artificial barriers, and they can pull those out anytime they want to. And every now and then you get a glimpse of them doing that. At the World Parliament of Religions, they had Hindus, Buddhists, Christians. Chuck Colson, who represents the Protestants, was there. You had all of these different religious groups there, commingling, worshiping together. So they can pull those artificial barriers out if they want. But they don't usually do it. But we're beginning to see more and more those artificial barriers come down. And this is an example of it. This is a Jewish rabbi who's a Catholic priest, and he's getting the Jews to start worshiping Mary and some other things. So here we see in his group literature put out. There you see, like, for instance, Father Herman Cohen, who's both Jewish and Catholic. Now, what's happened over the centuries, and this no longer is taking place because a lot of the artificial barriers have been taken out so that they can bring in their one world religion. But prior to about 1950, the way that they had set this up is that the Illuminati worked through front organizations. Those front organizations then covered themselves behind monotheistic religions. So behind Protestantism, you had Freemasonry pulling strings. Behind Roman Catholicism, you had Jesuits, and behind your Jewish community, you had your Sabbateans, your Frankists, communists. Behind Islam, you had Sufis. How many people knew that Colonel Gaddafi was a Sufi? Does that make a little bit more sense why you see a Freemason in the CIA maybe collaborating with Colonel Gaddafi?